Welcome back. Back here with Sean McKee, resident Warriors fan and LeBron hater. We get into the French Open to start off, talk a little bit about Novak Djokovic and kind of see what's going on with him as compared to where he was last year at this time, and what's going on through his head with this game and what's going to take to get back to where he's got to go. And then we get in, of course, to the NBA Finals coming off the heels of Game 3, getting ready for Game 4, and see what LeBron can do to help his legacy and keep his name among the greats of all time. And I get into it with Sean a little bit near the end as I say what it would look like between the Warriors and his beloved Chicago Bulls. And we talk about just decisions and things you guys have heard a million times. And we get ready for Game 4 and see if the Warriors can finish off the 16-0 and finish off the sweep of the Cavaliers. Okay, with me today, got a little jealous that Corey's appearance meter is ticking up above his, so he wanted to jump in and talk French Open and talk NBA Finals. Mr. San Francisco himself, Sean McKee, welcome back.
Thanks, man.
So
it's pretty convenient, you guys. Yeah, I'm living in Dub Nation with all this craziness going on.
Right in the middle of Dub Nation, and I'm sure it's a basketball team that's helping them forget about what the Giants are doing and not doing and the fact that they're going to be losing the Raiders next year. So good on Golden State. But before we get into the NBA Finals, I was talking to a coworker of mine, and he's a big, big Djokovic fan, and I told you this before, where every tournament Djokovic is in, oh, Djokovic is going to win. You know, he's the same country as Djokovic. Oh, he's going to win. Djokovic is going to win. Nah, man, Djokovic's not going to win. And, you know, it was funny at first when I was saying, nah, Federer's going to win. Nah, Nadal. And the fact that it's really happening this year. But something really struck me for the French Open was, you know, there's a lot of talk. Oh, he hired Agassi as his coach. He's, you know, got rid of his whole team. And he gets up against this Frenchman, Thiem, and just got ran off of the court. And the third set, losing Love 6, is if you want to be the number one player in the world and put yourself out there as one of the greatest of all time, and you're in a Grand Slam, you can't be losing like that.
Well, that and I see that, and that's the old Djokovic. So, in that old Djokovic, a lot of these, you know, fans of his haven't been watching him as long as I have. I remember Rafa putting a beat down on him in the French Open. I think it was like 2008, something like that. That was the first time I saw him. And he was known to be, you know, he's a front runner, and then he started kind of losing, and he'd blame it on his health, and he'd pull out all the time. And remember, he got into it with Andy Roddick. Andy Roddick's like, oh, yeah, this guy's total. Because he'd come in, he's like, yeah, I'm hurting. And then he'd play rope-a-dope and, you know, smoke you off the court. And and Roddick, I remember at the US Open, was like, oh, yeah, this guy's really hurt. Yeah, okay. Yeah, his arms hurt. He got a busted knee. And, like, Djokovic took it really personal. But that's kind of what the guy used to say. Like,
well, that's what I think kind of ruined him.
And then he turned. Go ahead.
No, his public perception early on for him, like me and you, you know, we've seen all these guys start and you know start and excel and start to come down. And Djokovic, when he first won that first U.S. Open, I just didn't like the guy. There's something about him, not his playing style necessarily, but the way he carried himself. And, you know, like you said, that rope-a-dope style and, you know, Andy Roddick seeing right through what this guy was all about, you know. That's no way to endear yourself to the casual fan and to endear yourself to have people really rally behind you. And I think now that he's down since last year, people are starting to see that again.
Well, initially he was like the jokester, which is funny because that's, you know, his last name. And he would go out, he'd impersonate people on the court when he's kind of up and comer, and it was like really cool. But some players have rubbed the wrong way because it was like, yeah, okay, we all do that, but we do it in practice. You know, when you're getting interviewed after a match, you're impersonating all these people and screwing around. But it was fun. And then, but then when the joke's on him and people were messing with him, he takes it so personally, especially when the crowd's booing or something. And the guy, I don't know, he'd pull out of matches. He just wouldn't, kind of reminds me of, what was that guy in Tomic in Australia? Just like, you know, some of those Australian players, the younger ones are just kind of spazzes. And it's like, and then he kind of, he got over it And yeah, and that was even after, so he won, you know, Australian Open, that was his breakthrough in 08, won a couple, but it wasn't until some years later, I think in 11, when he really took the number one spot, and then he became this kind of like adult. And then he, I remember he switched over to his diet where he got, he thought he was allergic to gluten or something. He had all these spots on his neck. It was looking really weird. And then he cut gluten out of his diet. And then it's like, oh, now I'm healthy and I don't need to pull out matches. And because that was the way to beat the guy. You get him on a hot day or something and he's sweating and dying. He's like, oh, I'm done. You know, just very, if he knew he was losing, he was just going to, you know.
He'd throw it in. He would just say, that's not my day. And, you know, as a Grand Slam winner and a career Grand Slam winner and someone that was number one for a good time over the last couple of years, to just throw in the towel in the third set. I mean, when crazier things have happened on clay, and you've shown that you can perform on clay.
Well, you're the defending champ, and you just completed the career Grand Slam last year. And ever since you have, you've fallen off a cliff. And some of that's excuse. You got married, had a baby or something. But it looks to me like he's back to the old joke of it. He just doesn't have the motivation and the desire. And this is, and you look at this just like you look at super team, super players, when they're on a roll, you're like, wow, they're going to do this for years. Like, I don't see anyone stopping them because they're going to play until they're 35 and blah, blah, blah. And then the success, it's like you have to challenge yourself or something. And that's what makes you marvel at people like Jordan and all these, you know, psycho competitors and Tom Brady, where they just find ways to go, to like psych them. They're like, what? He's talking shit about me? They like make it up in their head or something, and they like find these vendettas and go nuts. And
well, they need that chip. They're motivated by that chip.
He lives in Monte Carlo. He doesn't. His life's way too cushy.
So
to really, like.
So a lot of talk that I've heard is about that too. That, you know, the career Grand Slam, and then his inner circle has actually started to deteriorate, and there might be some things going on there, which I'm not going to speculate about that. Somebody's personal life is somebody's personal life, but it takes a strong player to be able to separate that. Or if anything, if you can't, take care of that stuff first, because right now, the way that he's playing, people will speculate for him, and you don't want the wrong things to come out. You know, he's a good player, but if he can't control whatever's going on, if that's the case, it's just going to reflect on his legacy when people talk about, you know, he was the great contender to the Nadal-Federer era, but he couldn't sustain it even when Nadal and Federer were post-peak.
Well, and look, Federer's got a pretty good idea. That's why he didn't play the first. I mean, this goes back further than Djokovic, but speaking of just the French Open, Federer's like, yeah, I know what it takes to win one of these. And, mm-hmm. You know, I know what it takes to win one of these. And I'm 36.
But how much of that also was that he saw?
And, this. And then you got Djokovic. Djokovic beats Thiem. He's playing Nadal. So you got to, you know, you're down one set. Okay, the next second set might be a fluke. And then you're like, okay, I got to come back, win three sets, and go play Nadal. Yeah.
And it's hot over there too again. So that guy with his in the heat, and that's especially against the guy who's conditioned like Nadal, that's gonna that will affect him. It always has.
Well, and it shows you that in the beginning of his career, it wasn't just his body couldn't take it, like he has a physical ailment. It's just he didn't want to put himself through it, because when he was winning and front running and number one, that guy would go toe-to-toe with Nadal. They'd have like 5-6 hour matches at Australian Open or something.
Yep.
So it's not like you can't do it. You just, I'm not really feeling putting my body through this today. That's what's crazy. And you just, usually to get to that spot, you have the killer instinct and you can turn it off. Mm.
Going back to, you know, talking about Federer and Nadal and, you know, what Federer has done, do you think that him sitting out the French also was, like you said, he knew what it took to win this tournament, but seeing what Nadal had been doing in the early clay season, he just said, you know what, I'm good. I'm not going to go to this tournament, make it to the semis, you know, expend myself before grass season.
Some of it has to do with Nadal, but he saw what he did last year, which was not by choice, and he took some time off. And he's like, wow, when I'm fresh, you know, I'm pretty hard to beat. And he felt different. To go all those five setters in Australia and beat Nadal, he probably shocked himself, especially, and he's like, wow, that's what a layover gets you. Because a lot of players, look, they need, like, especially Nadal, he needs to play a lot. He practices like he plays. Mm-hmm. Where Federer just gets out there and kind of gets the arm going, it'll come back to him. He doesn't need to keep it up all year round. And then the thing with the French in the grass season, it's such a short turnaround, and you got the opposite in surfaces. You have the slowest versus, you know, what used to be the quickest now. So the hard courts are even quicker than the grass. But if he's got a couple months to rest, he just came off all the confidence he ever needed. Didn't even play any of the clay season. So it wasn't Nadal that was ripping through the clay season and made him second guess. He took the clay season before it even started. He's been practicing on grass probably now for the last month, just practicing. And then he's going to play one tournament probably.
The Queen's Cup.
And then he's going to go for the Wimbledon. And that's more grass preparation than he's ever had in his career. And the most rest he's ever had going into Wimbledon. Mm-hmm. And Wimbledon, it's quick and the points are quicker, but your legs, you know, because you got to get low for shots. It'll tax your legs too. Grass and clay clay is super taxing because you're running and sliding and you're pushing off and all that. But grass, you gotta be pretty good shit too.
Is this Nadal's tournament or DM gonna give him hell?
I think. Well, it's funny because Deem, I got to remember how to pronounce it. He beat him in Rome, which is super surprising because Rome plays very much like the French Open. I got that same red play. Mm-hmm. And Raf is pretty unbeatable there. Not as much maybe as like Monte Carlo or something. I think the other one, too, won like 10 or 11 times. But Rome, I mean, up there. So that was really surprising, especially the way he beat him, too, in like the straight set. So I think he can push him. I don't think he's going to beat him. I think the other semifinal is more interesting because I'm a Wawrinka fan, and that dude can play on clay. He reminds me kind of like LeBron James style, just like a brute, you know? The dude just like smashes through. You know, it's not flowy. It's not pretty. It's just...
Well, almost like
so much strength,
no
so
matter
much
what surface he's on, that's, you know, his style being that smashy, that you can almost say like that Serena Williams style. It doesn't matter what surface, you know, his power is gonna kind of come through and benefit him.
Well, usually guys with a lot of power need a little bit more time to set up, and you got to have that power to hit through someone like a Nadal, because hitting through clay is harder, the ball's slower, So that's what it just favors Wawrinka better. And even though he's a one-handed backhand player, he can hit the high one-hander because he's so strong in the shoulders. So, I mean, he's won a French Open. He beat Djokovic in the final.
Yep.
So I think it's going to be Wawrinka, Nadal, and probably Nadal. But Wawrinka will get a set or two off him, I think.
If Wawrinka makes Nadal work, you know, again, he's not Nadal from 7 years ago. He's Nadal now. If Wawrinka's gonna make Nadal work in these longer matches, that could impact Nadal.
Wawrinka's the oldest one left, so it's not like he's younger than Nadal either.
But again, his game doesn't. He's not as physically taxing to him. If Nadal's going to make Wawrinka run corner to corner, baseline to baseline, then yeah. But I just, if these power shots, then Nadal's got to hit back. That could hurt on him and his arms and his shoulders too.
Usually I've seen all these matches, but with the NBA finals going on, I'm totally locked down there. So I could give probably a better, you know, you see him, you know, running up to the semifinals and the final, and I can kind of be like, okay, he's playing. I know what the level is that they're at, and seeing them before when they have won, they have lost. So I'm just going off with the past and kind of what the score lines say. Because sometimes the score lines are deceiving. You look at that like a cash fan, like, oh, 6-1, 6-2, you know. but right. Maybe they didn't actually play that way, and you know, I kind of know well, they got the right mentality, or they're coming in fresh, or you know.
So
it's good to see a young guy there, though. I'm happy about that.
Yeah, well, someone new because there's a who's next, who's next. Yeah. That's always the thing. Who's next? So if everything goes according to plan, figure you're going to be planning to go to a parade on Monday, right?
To plan. I'm actually pulling the ears for the sweep because actually that's not the plan because Monday I'm flying to Taiwan for work.
Oh.
So if I want to see game five, it's going to be like 4 a.m. in Taiwan or some craziness. So I don't want to do that. So I want, and you know, the Dubs, what's one game? It's like, what's that going to get you? Then the Cavs are going to go get smashed in Oracle. So, I mean, I don't think they want that. I think everyone wants a sweep.
Not that
I want to start calling this team the greatest ever. I just, you know, I like to have another sweep on LeBron's resume.
Well, outside of Cleveland, I think everybody thinks it's going to end tomorrow night. And
yeah.
I was saying this is going to go one of two ways. Either Cleveland wins tomorrow or Golden State's going to win by no less than 40 points. I've always defended LeBron and what a machine he is and how much he's played and how he holds up. But in the fourth quarters of games after Golden State wears them out in the third, it's become evident in this series where he's deferring to Kyrie and he's deferring to the rest of his team, and he's going to say that he's trying to create and play within the offense. But if you're going to be the leader and you're going to be the man, you've got to take control of the team. But I will not fault him because if he's tired and the guy has played a lot. But at the same time, it you put this team on your back and you go and win. Don't pass the ball to Kyle Korver on a key possession where you got Draymond on you who's got five and he's going to play off of you. Also, you've seen that they were switching Curry onto you, which I still can't figure out the thought process behind that.
They got that out 2 or 3 times in a row, and they hadn't got that, you know, in the first 2.5 games. How is he finding his way to LeBron?
Well, they were actively switching to get him on there.
Right.
Like, there was at one point yesterday, Clay was on him, and then Steph switched. And I couldn't figure out why they were doing that.
So I was watching some 1998 Bulls Jazz, and I watched the fourth quarter of Michael Jordan's last game. And I don't remember it as clear as I used to, so that's why I watched it. And, man, were those guys tired. They were tired in the start of the fourth. Jordan was on fumes.
Mm-hmm.
Pippen couldn't even bend over. I don't know if he had some, like, back spasm or what was going on. Pippen had a lot of injury. They act like Pippen was always there. Dude, that guy, he's had a lot of issues.
Pippen was fragile,
not a lot,
yeah.
But,
yeah.
You know, he had issues in the playoffs where Jordan had to pull the team all by himself.
Yeah.
And even Jordan, you know, sometimes he'd be bricking. But when that last shot happened, they're like, well, Jordan deferred to Kerr or he deferred. Yeah, because they're double teaming.
Yeah,
when you got three people at you, given a really good high percentage 3-point shooter like Steve Kerr, it's a really good play. They weren't doubling LeBron. It was LeBron versus 5-foul Draymond.
Right,
take him to the hole.
Right.
What are you doing? Like, and that's what people have a problem with LeBron because he's too that you revert to what your thing is, what you're good at. It's a lot like tennis. When you have that match point, what are you going to do? You're going to hit your best serve, and you're going to go to your go-to play, you know, your inside out, or whatever it is, what works for you. And that's what he always goes to.
To me, worst-case scenario in that possession is, worst-case scenario is 2 points. 2 points. The best-case scenario, an and-one, Draymond fouls out, and you got the rest of the game without him in there. That's your best-case scenario.
Yeah.
So I'm taking the 2 points. And Kyle Korver, I get it. He was brought to this team to hit shots like that in that situation. But also LeBron James, who wants his legacy to be remembered as one of the greatest of all time. To me, he's top five already there, fighting to get to top three, to me. But I get it. He wants that on his shoulders. Yeah, put it on your shoulders and do what you got to do.
Those situations aren't normal for anybody unless you've done them before. Kyle Korver has never hit some game-winning three in the finals. So it doesn't matter if he was hot as, you know, hitting every shot, him and JR just bombing all these threes all game. I wouldn't give either of them the last shot. That's the point.
Right.
If he hits it, then it's like, okay. If he doesn't, you know, LeBron's like, well, I did the right play. I just think he's, I get mad because I'm like, oh, this guy thinks there's too many number stat people out there, and there's too many, well, I got a triple double, so I'm good. You know, I made the right play, so we didn't lose, but hey, I'd make that play again. No, you make the play, like, it's just to win. If you don't win, everything was wrong. That, or you can go back, like, okay, you know, maybe we should do this, change some things, but it's the killer instinct. It's the, you know,
which I think
just doesn't happen.
He doesn't have that. He doesn't. The only time I ever really saw that was when he murdered Boston in the Eastern Conference Finals, when he was with Miami, and then when he murdered Detroit in the playoffs that year in 07. That's the only time I can really say that I've seen LeBron just have that killer instinct, that Kobe Bryant instinct to just go kill people and take everything.
Yeah, and that's why it's crazy, because you've seen it before. I remember when Ray Allen hit that shot, and then in game 7 against the Spurs, he just went nutcase. And you just couldn't stop him in the fourth quarter. It's just like, you I was like, wow, oh, I hate this guy, but well, he's kind of good. Damn it. You know, I was like, it was so good. It's, when you're a super hater and you're like, that's pretty good.
That's yeah, I don't think you hide.
And then people know that's in him.
Yeah, you don't hide the fact that you don't like LeBron James. I'm looking at it more as a point that he's in his, you know, later on in his career, that you look at the historical portion of what he's doing and what he's done, and I respect his game. I can't get behind him when he has a microphone in his hand. You know, in this culture that we have where people are subtweeting and we're throwing shade or whatever, he talked today and it was almost like an exit interview. You know, they were asking him about, you know, are there similarities between you and Durant, because Durant went to the super team, and right away he passive aggressively said, I don't think our situations are the same at all. I went down to Miami and we had two guys. We had to build the rest of the roster. And when I came back from Cleveland, it was me and Kyrie, and we had to build the rest of the roster. Kevin, as great as he is, you know, great player, he's, you know, I respect his game, blah, blah, blah. He went to a team that was already championship ready, which, yes, but I mean, he went to a super team. You know, he just went to a team that was already built.
Left and they got Kyrie. Okay, they wouldn't get Kyrie. So you let the Cavs pretty much fall off a cliff and then have all these high draft picks, and they get Kyrie, which is, that guy's so good.
He's so good. He had me fooled 2 years ago. No, this guy can't dribble and he can't shoot. And whatever he's done over the last couple seasons, where he's their closer. You said it the other day.
Yeah.
He's their closer. Yeah. And in the fourth quarter, when he's got the fresher legs and he's got that killer instinct, it's right if LeBron wants to go to him, but don't give it to Korver. Yeah. You take it or Kyrie take it. There's two guys on your team that can beat the Golden State Warriors, and it's you and Kyrie Irving. Kyrie Irving was hitting circus shots. Kyrie Irving had that team on his back in the third and fourth quarters, and that's the way you're going to have to run it. And I don't think Golden State has a matchup for him either, for Kyrie, because Kyrie was his ball handling has gotten so much better. The way that he can get into the paint and do what he wants to do, that's what you feed off of.
I just think if Kyrie was like a Clay, if he had a little bit more Clay in him, where he just, you know, pull up, that's what LeBron wants. LeBron wants to feed it to a guy, and then he just, you know, takes a shot.
Yeah.
So to give it to Kyrie and let him, he is the closer, but then I think something in his head is like, well, I can't just not touch the ball for two possessions and then just hand it to Kyrie and everyone you know, get out of the way. I mean, because that's going to hurt my life. I think he's just always churning and burning about this legacy.
Yeah, he's very self-aware about his place in history.
I think he's got it on his mind all the time. And he's like, well, I put up, you know, I put up all these numbers, so I got, I'm averaging triple doubles and da-da-da. You're like, yeah, volume-wise, you're putting up a lot. But, like, what made Jordan so great is in the end, he never lost. And I'm I even checked back. He had tough-ass matchups. When they played that 98 finals, they came off, the Pacers at Game 7? Or, like, those guys were beat up, beat down. I don't remember any excuses. I don't remember flu game excuse. I don't remember, you know, Scottie Pippen can't even walk. I don't remember. I mean, I'm looking at 98, and I'm like, if they lose that game, you know how much trouble they are in a Game 7? And, you know, Jordan knows this. And there you go.
Yep.
Steals the ball from Karl Malone. I'm Karl Malone.
Karl Malone.
Walks it down. Pops it off. I mean,
casually. You know, all the Jordan haters will say he pushed off. Whatever. He didn't push off. That's greatness.
And for LeBron, and even they were giving him heat for taking, you know, because he's not Jordan. That was Jordan's go-to shot. LeBron's is going to the basket. He's the best bulldozer of all time.
Mm-hmm.
You go to your move.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter if they know it's coming. They can't stop it. That's what you just keep doing. That's what you do in tennis. You find something, like in tennis, it's like, oh, I just keep hitting this corner. I'll just keep playing the same point out the same way. I'm going to hit the wide serve. And I'm going to hit to the open court because I can't stop it.
And that's how he
beat. Why would you change?
That's how
people freak out. They get on match point, and then they change what they've been doing, and they do something. They totally have a, you know, brain freak out, and they're like, you just served in volley. You didn't do that all match. What are you doing? You know, like, they just, I got to do something different. I got to, he's outthinking his own self.
But here's the counter argument to that. Golden State is on the verge of going 16-0. And Curry is doing things that are not his best things, and Durant's doing things that are not his best things. They were willing to get together, sacrifice touches, and for the betterment of the team, for the Warriors to succeed. Real quietly, nobody's talking about Steph had a triple-double in Game 2, and that he had 13 rebounds the other night. You know, he's got more rebounds. Then you know, that's what everybody's saying. Oh, he's got more rebounds than Tristan Thompson has in the whole series. Part of that is because it's a jump shooters game now, and you have long rebounds where guards are able to grab rebounds now. But he's not scared to go down low either. He is looking to drive when he's got a head of steam on him. When he's not pulling, you know, when he's not setting up and hanging out on behind the 3-point arc, he's looking to drive. And
I'm saying in the closeout moments. Yeah, I get, like, you know, doing other things that you're not normally doing, and, you know, Durant with the defense that he's brought this year. I'm saying when it's like, you know, count to 10 seconds left in the game, Steph Curry's going to pull up for a three. Kevin Durant's going to either pull up for a three or he's going to take a mid-range. Kevin Durant's got, like, three options, you know.
Yeah.
LeBron James, I really do. You have one option that I see as 90%. Especially when you're only down two, is barrel your ass to the basket. I don't know what.
You know, not for nothing, but his three-point shooting has gotten a lot better in the last couple of years, too. So he's got that bullet in his chamber if he wants to pull that out. But the problem is the defenses are spreading out, too, because Kyrie shoots the three, Kevin Love shoots the three, mm-hmm. Kyle Korver shoots the three, J.R. Smith shoots the three. So there's not a whole lot of space behind that arc to pull that shot off, which at that point, well, it benefits him because he's going to be being guarded one-on-one.
He had a couple good three-pointers, you know, in that game. He hit, like, three or four.
Yeah.
And throughout the game, hitting shots, making passes, doing – that's all good. I'm just saying, the last moment, he's not going to do some, you know, a fadeaway, like I think he did on Iguodala, where he kind of faded away. The ball hardly reached the rim.
Mm-hmm. Well, he doesn't. When you're seeing guys shoot short like that, I mean, that's they won't admit it, but that's fatigue. I mean, the guy doesn't have spring in his legs after, you know, this long season and all the minutes that he's playing. And, you know, I don't know if it's Ty Lue's fault, if it's his fault for having too much pride, But when you're in the middle of the regular season and everybody knows you're going to the finals again, rest.
Yeah. Well,
that's not, you know, he's just too self-aware of his place in history. We talked about that already. And he doesn't want, you know, the old timers to say, well, we never rested. We never. No, you're right. The old timers, they didn't rest. Also, they're, you know, LeBron James playing back then is the biggest guy in the NBA. Now he's
he is 6'9", 250 running up and down the court and, you know, scoring 40 points.
Right. Well, you guys
and running through 8 consecutive finals and playing way more than, you know, they're like, oh, 80 games. Like, the dude's playing like way more than, you know, 100 games.
Right. Every year for the last 8 years that he's played that much. And, there's going to be fatigue. His body's going to get worn out. I don't care if he's, you know, 35, 36, or if he's 25, 26. When you play that much, it's going to take its toll. And now that we're into June and he's in the finals again, he's got an athletic team, a younger team that's running him around on defense. They're almost kind of hiding him on defense too, because he gets a couple blocks a game, but it's almost a matter of that he's in the right spot at the right time to get those blocks. So now you're looking at the point where you've got, if LeBron's going to stick around, obviously he is. He's still got, you know, everyone forgets he was 18 years old when he came into the league. But now it's a transition. Yeah. Clearly this is Kyrie Irving's team going forward. He needs to identify that, which I think he will. They're going to need pieces. People are talking about Paul George. That's a rental player. Yeah. Paul George is going to end up in L.A. after next year anyways. But he's going to need to coexist knowing that the ball offense is going to run through Kyrie. And he's going to have to facilitate that and accept that. Because Kyrie Irving is a
roster,
lot younger.
Isn't this roster, I mean, aren't they paying more in luxury tax than any other team?
Yeah, I mean, they've got some higher salaries without having anything in front of me right now. They definitely have lots of you know, penalties that they're going to be paying, for sure. I mean, you can't have LeBron and Kyrie and Kevin Love and you know, these bigger contracts. Forget, but I think they're still paying Bogut.
Tristan got a deal too, because
yep.
LeBron pushed for it, yep. And now they got to pay him. And he's off with the Kardashians.
Well, that's the curse of the Kardashians.
He's totally missing the finals.
I don't think it's any surprise that last year James Harden was messing around with the Kardashian. Houston underachieved. This year he got rid of the Kardashian. He's probably going to win the MVP award. And you know, yeah, curse of the Kardashians, stay away. Your town right now. You said it before the series that everybody's all hype. Now that they're up 3-0. In the potential to be the first 16-0 team to run through the playoffs. They're 30-1 in their last 31 games. It's got to be, you guys got to be going nuts right now.
I think it is, but not as much as last year, actually. I mean, there will be when they win, but when you lose a 3-1 lead, and as gutted as, you know, I felt, and then plus a lot of the people that are, these guys are lifelong, like, old school duck. I mean, the people that are Giants fans, the baseball team, I kind of question their, you know, longevity. But these Warriors fans are for real. Like, this is for real. Like, they loved it back in Chris Mullin days, Run TMC.
Run TMC.
You know, they got jerseys from back then. It's for real. So, like, they were super gutted. And once the buzzer sounds, whether it's Game 5, Game 4, which will be one of those two, they're not getting too excited. They're excited, but even you see it on the faces of the players. I mean, did you watch that Western Conference victory? I mean, they look like they lost the damn thing.
No, they were. Like, I mean, they've gotten into the mode where
whatever.
I actually like seeing that. When you got teams that are expected to do what they got to do, I like seeing that, which kind of bothers me in baseball. You know, you clinch a playoff berth. Let's do champagne in the locker room. Let's all wear our ski goggles.
Yeah.
You win your first round wild card game. Let's do champagne. Let's do this. You win the divisional series. Let's do champagne. But, you know, yeah, if you win the league championship series and you go to the World Series, okay, let's do it for that. But now, you know, when you had the Yankees doing their thing, they weren't doing all that either. When you got, you know, the Penguins right now, they're in their second Stanley Cup final. And, you know, they don't celebrate round after round, and then, you know, they're to the point where they don't really celebrate the conference championships anymore either, because you set out to do one thing every year, and that's win a championship.
Especially when you're you know, and you got Durant, who, when he even said when he won in 2012 to go to the finals, he felt like that was a championship. I mean, that's how the Warriors felt in 2015, and luckily, you know, the Cavs were kind of beat up, because that's how you feel. You know, that's the first time you're there, you're going up against this guy that's been there 5-6 times in a row, you're like, whoa. But now everyone on the Warriors, you know, a couple of the role players, it's their first time, but the main boys, they've been there, done that, and Durant has been sitting back for how many years, just like salivating. Every jump shot he's hit in the last 5 years has been like, you know, LeBron's face at the rim, and yeah, you can see it. He's taking that dude. He's like, oh, as soon as he sees LeBron on him, he's taking him. He's either hitting a jumper on him, hitting a three on him, or he's taking him in the hole.
I think Kevin Durant. He doesn't hide the fact that he wants to be considered the best player in the league, and he's right there. He embraces this challenge. He has embraced this, knowing that it's been a collision course to go up against LeBron on the biggest stage again, because in 2012 he had that. Maybe a little too dumb and reluctant to realize the stakes, and too young. But, you know, right now, I mean, he's clearly the MVP of this finals. You said it earlier, even though this is Steph's best finals, clearly what Durant has done on both ends, he's so locked in. And the guy all year long, he's very matter-of-fact. He holds nothing back, that he wants to win a championship, and he's done what he thinks he had to do it. And he got to the right situation, obviously, and it's benefited him. But he's got that instinct, you know, the Slim Reaper. He's coming to get you.
Yeah.
And he's got that instinct to just put it away. And the guys that were around for last year being down 3-1, they remember what that tastes like. So they're locked in even more, too.
Mike, you know, my neighbor Jason, super Dubs fan.
Shout out to Jason.
Shout out, Jason. So we were talking after last year, and, you know, we were down and out, and then they signed Durant, and I go, this might be the best thing ever that they lost. And you hear people say that, too. If they didn't lose, you know, this is, you know, it was hard to keep the team together. Are they going to do it again? It would have been a more even, you know, matchup. I don't know if they get past the Spurs even this year if Kawhi doesn't get hurt. So then, you know, that happens. They get Durant. Durant just got blown out. He had a 3-1 lead that he lost, and he's like, damn it, I'm so sick of Westbrook. And then I would be sick of that guy too. What a spaz. I know a lot of people love him. I think you love him. Corey loves him.
I like Westbrook, and the more and more I thought about it after the season ended, yeah, I mean, it's inflated. It's definitely inflated.
And you can see, now you see Durant. He goes, on one hand, I see all the people. He's ring chasing. Okay, I get it. Yeah, he's going to the best team. But look at where he fits in. The exact position that they needed, that they look how much money Harrison Barnes got. It's like as much as Durant. So they would have had to pay Harrison Barnes as much as they're paying.
Right.
So they're like, okay, we're getting Durant.
Well, and
he fits in perfect, and the guy never wants to be this alpha nutbag, like, you know, or he doesn't want to play with one either, like Westbrook. And he's like, these guys play the way I want to play, and I get to go up, because he knows I got to get to the finals and put a hurting on LeBron, or I'm not the best player, or I can't even be considered. I'm not even in the conversation. And no matter what you do in the regular season and what you do in the playoffs, the finals is what lives on forever. None of that. You're not going back and watching playoff series on YouTube of, you know, the 90s. You're only watching the finals. You're only, you know, that's all that matters, really. Right. And he realized that, because when you know, after being a kid and getting tossed and having these years where he's like a scoring champion and MVP, he's like, and I think Steph learned that too. He's like, you know, I'm an MVP, unanimous MVP, 72 win season. None of it matters. And you got these guys, they both learned the perfect amount of lessons at the perfect amount of time, with the salary cap opening up at the perfect time. They both lost 3-1 leads. I mean, it's like stars aligned for the most epic team ever.
Yeah, and I think the motivation was there too, because all year long he's heard, if Golden State doesn't win, what did Durant do? If Golden State, it doesn't mean anything if you know Durant doesn't win a title. How could you let this happen and mess up the chemistry of a championship team? You guys didn't win the title. Chasing a ring is one thing. A player like Kevin Durant, if you go to any team, put him on Portland, they're going to be an immediate title contender as well. So is he chasing a ring to go play with Lillard and McCollum? No. You put him on a team like, even if you would have put him in New Orleans with Davis, that team becomes a championship competitor too. I mean, he's just that type of player that will change a franchise's fortunes around.
Yeah.
So he said,
I don't think that's how he wants to play. He could play and he could be different Kevin Durant. He could be the Oklahoma City Kevin Durant. He could be a different Kevin Durant for different teams. But he saw, wow, if I'm on this Golden State team, they run an offense that's so fast, so ferocious. I fit in so well. This whole small ball thing where I'm 7 foot, I'm the damn center. And I was like, this is great. And me and Draymond, it's like, you see all the pieces, and it really made no sense to go anywhere else.
So I mean, he spent that weekend in Boston, and everybody thought he might have ended up with the Celtics.
Weakest move ever.
No, I'm saying he spent that weekend in Boston. I think that would have been a good fit had he gone to Boston. But again, I don't know that his style.
No, you got a ball dominant point guard. Steph's not ball dominant.
What do you mean? The two-time MVP? Yeah, of course he's ball dominant. The guy was used to getting all his shots, and I think Isaiah Thomas would have been more than happy to relinquish some of that. As you could see, he went out with injuries at the end of the year. If he would have been able to have some of that alleviated from him, I think he would have been more than happy. But you're right. I think Golden State at the time
is like a Kyrie, is like a Westbrook a little bit. I don't see this. That's a little different for a point guard. I don't see him as
well. He does because he's not emotional. He doesn't keep. He doesn't wear his emotions on his sleeve. I don't. He's a shoot first guard.
No, where they play, he doesn't just dribble down and pull up and bump three. He does that occasionally, but he comes down. You got point forward Draymond, and then you got point forward Durant. And then Steph brings it down. Even Clay brings it down sometimes. It's just like a lot of sharing, a lot of passing. Their offense is just so much different than everyone else. I see. And that's what Durant wanted. All these other offenses are just too stale for Durant. It's to be as good as he is now. He would just be like the regular OKC Durant. Because it'd be like the end of game three where everyone's standing around and Kyrie dribble, 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 dribble. They're not even cutting. They're not doing anything. They're just like, statues, and that's the offense. He didn't want to go to another offense like that.
Well, right. Everybody knew their role. They didn't want to get in Kyrie's way. They're, get the ball to Kyrie and everybody get the hell out of the way, right, to paraphrase Doug Collins, which wasn't maybe that wasn't the worst thing in the world. But another thing that affects Cleveland is it's LeBron and Kyrie. If Kevin Love is off, he's really off like he was yesterday. He'll still pull his rebounds. But the Warriors go 8-9 deep, and they get contributions off the bench from everybody. There were stretches of the game where both Steph and Kevin Durant were sitting and Golden State was still hanging on, keeping it within reach so that when those guys did come back in, they did what they did.
Well, I know to me this was going to be their hardest game. They knew it was their hardest game. And even after the game, even KD was watching film from last year. The team wasn't even on. And they always came into Cleveland. And the first quarter last year, it was just like gangbusters. And it was wire-to-wire victory. And they knew, hold them, stay with them, stay with them. And they end up hitting, a record number of threes in the first quarter just to hang with Cleveland. Because it was like the energy. You go down 0-2, okay, that was just they won their home game. Now we have to hold serve. So I don't think Cleveland, both years in 2015 and 2016, they don't feel like they're really down. Yeah, they're down, but they're like, well, now we start. Playoffs start now. And they came out and always played really well. And I knew that was going to be their biggest challenge, and they did too. And you could just tell like that. They treated that game so much more serious because the Warriors, their Achilles heel is they get a little, they get kind of late. They get disinterested and Steph starts throwing the ball all over the place.
Yeah.
It's like, what are you doing? And they were locked in.
I missed the first quarter when I got home and I started watching. I saw that LeBron had 21 in the first 22 minutes. And I said, well, here's the LeBron game. This is the LeBron game that you know, he'll steal, that he'll single-handedly win. And it kind of stopped from there. And that's when, you know, Kyrie Irving kind of stepped on. And credit to the defensive scheme that Steve Kerr and his team had worked out to be able to shift that. Because if LeBron had a second quarter, had a third quarter that he had in the first quarter, the game's not within reach anymore. But I think he gets in his own head where he's conflicted. This is my team, or do I have to, you know, do the right thing and, you know, give it to... He gets conflicted, and that must have messed him up, where Golden State just understood that keep within distance, keep within shooting distance, keep within shooting distance, and we've got them right where we want them. And that last 3 minutes, fatigue set in. Golden State didn't waver, and they stayed within their offense. They didn't press. I mean, that was the thing to me, is you didn't see them start jacking threes out of panic. They stayed within their offense. They were still not using a lot of time on the shot clock when they had, you know, when they had the pieces in place that they wanted. And they got back and they won.
I like how you say, you know, he has too many options and you get in your own head. And it's kind of like, I first learned that analogy in tennis, where you had, you know, highly skilled tennis players that have, they can pretty much do anything on the court, like a Federer or a, you know, maybe not so much Sampras, he's a little more straightforward, but like a Federer, and that all around game. Those guys usually take longer to be good, because it's like, well, I can do anything, and it's choosing what to do. Mm-hmm. You know? So usually, but then in the long run, they become, you know, much better than the other players because they can do so much more. And the other ones are, you know, one trick ponies and stuff like that.
Well, they figure out that they're good at everything, but they're not great at a few things. And then once they figure out that there are a couple great things that they have, that's when they start to excel.
Well, like with Jordan, if he's got a hit the game winning shot, you know it's going to be a two, and you know it's going to be a mid range. He may drive to the basket, maybe.
Well, there was the two stages in his career.
What's your go to thing? So if he just knew what he's like, this is what I'm going to do, and I'm going to just go execute better than the guy defending me. And LeBron's got he's surveying the field. He's got 30 options around him. You know, he's too many things going on.
But in his head, he's the guy. I'm the man. I have to do this. I have to, you know, protect, you know, defend the land, and, you know, all of this. That's always in the back of his head. Kicking to the open guy, and like you said it earlier, well, Jordan kicked out to Kerr. Yeah, because Jordan was being double teamed. Kicking it out to Korver, arguably the right move. If you're really that hell bent on protecting your legacy, you take the ball, take the shot.
Yeah.
And then to have...
If you needed a three, then maybe, you know, you're like, well, Korver's a better three shooter than me, then, you know, I could see him not wanting to jack up one at the top, you know, top of the key or something. But they needed two.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But it's the fear. I've seen other teams do this throughout the season. It's the fear of Golden State. And there's... it's funny how... And, you know, if... It was funny because I'm watching the 98. I was watching that earlier today. And where John Stockton, they're down by, I think, 1 point or 2 points. Maybe it's one or, I think it was one. And he jacks up a three. I'm like, what are you doing? And I know there's time left, so they're like, hey, I jack up a three, and then I put it out of reach.
But part of that is they don't want to leave points on the court either, because you're going up against a prolific offense like Golden State, where they can come down and they're going to get their points. So you've got to make sure you get yours. I mean, you talked about it. Cleveland had to have an outstanding three-point shooting quarter just to stay in the game. And they know that. So if they're going to see an opportunity to put an extra point on, they're going to do that. You know, you've brought up the 98 Bulls quite a bit.
I think it's because you're right, because, you know, they came down, Clay hit the three, and then KD hit the three, and then that's in their head now.
Mm-hmm.
So before that, they were actually missing a few. And those two, I think, stuck in their head where they're like, well, we need a three. And that's why you got Kyrie doing the step back, like he needed a three. Mm-hmm. I better, you know, and he did like three steps back. He's like, one, two, you know, like flying back from the 3-point line to try to get this fading three.
Yep, and you gotta keep the points on the board to just maintain with Golden State. So if Golden State wins tomorrow night, tonight if I get this out tomorrow or on Friday, if Golden State wins Friday night, 16-0, another championship, is Golden State 2016-17 the best team of all time? Corey and I went deep onto the 94 Rockets versus the 94 Bulls. Is this Golden State team better than any one of those Bulls teams? I'm going to shock you here. I think they are.
I think if they actually played, you're right. Because you go watch that footage, and, I mean, players just get better. You know, they're taller, they're faster. It was rough and tough. I'm watching some of those 90s games, and that was tough. And, you know, Steph Curry, you get his mouth blown out, now hand-checking. It was pretty rough, too, this game three. But, man, were they fast. They're flying up and down the court. Like, they weren't doing that back then.
No.
Like, not even close.
No.
Not even close. You're amazed by the speed difference. And you don't really know because it's how you watch the game these days. But, yeah, if there's a time machine, they would definitely smoke them.
No.
They'd smoke all those old teams.
It's but just, even if you put
would.
Together...
Now, are they the best team, though, if you look at it like... Just like you say, you know, athletes today could, you know, kill the other... Yeah. That's all true, but the way Jordan and the Bulls dominated that era, that was the best team. You can't say, oh, they won. That's like saying the Cavs would kill all the team, or the Cavs of last year would destroy all the teams back in the 90s and beyond.
I disagree.
Yeah, they probably would.
I disagree.
It doesn't make them.
I like to look at matchups. I disagree. This matchup with Golden State against the Bulls. I there's no way that the Bulls can score as much as Golden State can. There's
the
no
thing.
Way.
That's
and,
what I'm saying. Even
and they've got
year.
So many people that
they
are going to
no
piss Jordan
like
off, and Jordan's going to go off for 50 a game, but that's going to take away from Pippen. They're
right.
Basically playing 4-on-5 on offense because Rodman's not going to get you points, so Draymond's not going to have to expend himself on defense. He can help Durant on Jordan. He can help Durant on Pippen and focus on that. Kerr and those guys weren't moving around so much, so you can hide Curry on Kerr or BJ. And, again, your matchup is going to be Jordan and Durant. Who's going to win that matchup? And who's Jordan playing? Jordan was a great defender. Who's he going to defend? You're going to put Klay on Jordan, I think. And Klay's long.
They don't have a seven-footer that could do what KD does now.
No.
So they
no.
definitely would be freaked out back then. But the thing is, we look at them playing now instead of Golden State playing then. So yeah, that kind of helps out the 96 Bulls and the older teams. And I like the argument that the old guys bring up where it's like, well, the three ball wasn't a big deal because we didn't know it was. You know, through the math and we realize, you know, you can hit 33% of these and it's like hitting 50% of twos. So they would adapt it. So you take them right now and like, hey, come, you know, step right out of 96 in the 2017. Yeah, they're going to get beat. But if they came up together as players, you know.
No, I would say Golden State still has a real good chance. In those rules back then, nobody's driving to get beat up and thrown onto the ground. Nobody's driving. Yeah, the hand checking and stuff like that, no problem. I think Steph and Durant and Klay are too quick for everybody on those teams. And yeah, I know what I've said about LeBron being able to bulldoze and knock Mahorn and Lambeer on their asses, but no, this team's not a drive team. Look, this Zaza was out so much yesterday, and he's their big presence down low. You don't need a guy presence down low. And if you're going to be spreading out the lane, then that's just going to Curry's too quick, and he will drive on you. Klay, he's got a real fast first dribble, and he's going to take off on you because that lane's going to be open because Draymond hangs out on the perimeter, so does Durant and Klay. And all these guys are just going to have so much space, and, you know, triangle be damned. and defense and Rodman be damned. I just don't see it, even with the rules back then.
So when they play, yeah, I agree. This team would murder any team from the 80s or 90s, any of them. But to be considered as great as those teams, they need to win more championships. So you don't win, you know, you win one championship and then you're a tumble to super team, but then you lose two more championships. Well, the Bulls are still better.
Okay. Still better, so LeBron. I'm going to put you in a really, really hard spot right now. I'm going to put you in a really hard spot right now. It hurts me. It hurts me more than it hurts you, Sean. So Joe Montana, the better quarterback than Brady because Brady lost two.
I know. I think of that too. no, because he has more titles. If LeBron gets seven titles, then he can be like, oh, I have more titles than Jordan. And then they're going to be like, well, Bill Russell has the most titles. I'm like, okay, well, he does, but everyone still says Jordan's the best. So is it titles? Is it, what is it? I don't know.
No, and again, so
it's the perfect. You mean the comparing the Joe Montana perfection and the Joe Montana and Michael Jordan have that perfection in the finals in the Super Bowl.
I'm not looking at like an overall historical picture. I'm looking at the 16-17 Warriors versus the 95-96 Bulls, the 96-97 Bulls, which, you know, argue which one you want, which one was the better team, who wins. And I still think this Warriors team wins. Yeah, historically the Bulls will always be remembered as arguably the best. Which team?
I think for one season. Because, 72-73, that's not all nice, but isn't 16-0? If they pull off 16-0, that's like double the weight that you give a 73-win season.
Well, that's what I'm saying, too, because the playoffs, I mean, that's the best of the best. And, yeah, they were fortunate enough to have Kawhi go down when they were in the Western Conference Finals, but,
yeah, you know, that's two games at least.
It's two games. So, you know, the Bulls, you know, fans and everybody are going to throw the asterisks there.
All this stuff gets washed over. 16-0 is the only thing going to be left behind if they can do it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I think that's the Golden State has shown that they chase history, and they will definitely be conscious of that. This game tomorrow night, like I said, goes one of two ways. Golden State wins by 40, or Cleveland wins. There's not going to be a close game tomorrow. And I may be wrong, and this is maybe my, you know, my gut, but my gut tells me it goes one of two ways tomorrow. Cleveland wins, or Golden State wins by 60.
I think you'll know by halftime, really. Because if Cleveland, the only way to go to is do what the Spurs did. If you can run up on them, and they can do it in Cleveland, and they've done it before. I don't know about this year, because they came out with the same firepower as they did last year. And last year they had them up by, you know, they were up by 20 by half or something. They were killing them in the first quarter. They couldn't do it this year. So maybe, and knowing that you did the year before, so, you know, maybe they even gave more effort yesterday and they were only 6 points. They were like down or something. And like, wow, this is going to be hard. You know, it takes so much out of you mentally these last three games, knowing, just demoralizing. So it's not that they can't do it. It's just they probably can't do it now because of so many beat downs and you just, you know, you lose your confidence and everything. So you'll know if they come out and the Warriors are playing loose and throwing the ball away. I mean, loose in a bad way where, you know, they're kind of like, hey, we're, you know, they're not locked in and they let the Cavs get a run. Like, you'll know by halftime. And you're right. You're right. How it's going to go. I actually think it's going to be a blowout either way. It's either going to be a blowout one way or the other. Because I don't think the Cavs, I think if it's close like it was yesterday, I don't think the Cavs can empty the tank like they did to try to win a game four. I don't know. Unless they got that much pride to not let LeBron get swept. You know, that's the whole thing. We can't let LeBron get swept.
How much does the collective How much does the collective butt of the Bay Area pucker up if Cleveland wins tomorrow night?
No, I think they're actually a lot of the fair weather guys are happy because they're like, I want to party in, you know, Oakland, because first championship was in, or you know, two years ago, and they both won on each other's floor, so they haven't won at home yet. And this place would, I mean, it'd blow the roof off it. You know, someone said it's like playing in a jet engine. I can't imagine a game five closeout, and you know, they go to game five, they're going to run the score. Talk about being locked in. They are not coming back to Cleveland.
I remember when the Pistons won in 04, watching that game on TV and just hearing how loud it was. That game got out of hand by the middle of the third quarter, and you knew what was happening. So everybody just kind of started partying, and as the fourth quarter went on, it got a little bit more quiet. But when the Pistons started taking control of that game, I mean, one of the coolest things I can remember as a sports fan is that crowd, listening to that crowd. Because, I mean, just that the cliche that I can't stand, but the Detroit versus everybody mentality of the Showtime Lakers and the Hollywood Lakers and whatever, and doing what they did to them, but that crowd was insane. Me as a sports fan, I get too nervous. I don't care where the game is. You got a chance to close it out. Close it out. Close it out. Don't leave anything to chance, especially that we've seen the Falcons blow a 28-point lead. You've seen the Indians blow a 3-1 lead. Golden State blow a 3-1 lead. Close it out. Just finish it up wherever you're at. You know, the fans and being home for the fans, and that's great and good. There's parades. Have a rally. Just close it out.
Well, it's fun to be on an airplane, too, partying on the way back.
Cleveland stopped in Las Vegas last year. It was the J.R. Smith shirtless tour?
Yeah. So, you know, I look at, like, last year, and I have such confidence if they go to Game 5, it's some crazy, you know, hey, maybe the Cavs are just, like, conceding defeat, and they get all loose and just start bombing threes, and they win Game 4. I have no doubt that Game 5, the level of intensity and being locked in, and you think, oh, well, what happened last year? Well, you know, when you got that kind of momentum swing, that's the same feeling they felt now that the Cavs are feeling now, just like gutted. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're going back home to close it out. Oh, you don't have Draymond. He's got to go hang out in the Oakland Athletics Stadium.
Yeah.
You know, the Oco. He's got to hang. He can't even be in the thing. Then you get beat on your home court. Have to go to Cleveland. That's not a fun plane ride. Then you lose that one. Steph throws his mouthpiece, gets fouled out. I mean, those two games, talk about being gutted. And then you got to go to Game 7. So that was the equalizer, and that's why I came down the last shot.
Well, that was really the first time they were ever challenged in the last 2 years.
And Oracle, but these guys locked in after losing a 3-1 last year. Dude, if they go to Game 5, it's going to be like 40 points. Like, they will destroy them.
Well, I don't think it's any surprise.
You know Cleveland thinking that, and they don't want to have any part of it. They're just going to kind of roll over.
You know, and I'm sure Kerr has a lot to do with that. For him to come back when he did, you know, that was definitely with intent. He did not want his team to go into game, you know, win game one the way they did, and just kick up their heels and say we got this. Kerr needed to come back to remind everybody, listen up, guys, we were up 2-0 going to their place last year too. Let's, you know, Kerr is instilling that focus into them, and you know, great job for him, the whole coaching staff, and what they did this whole year, because you know, him sitting out and Mike Brown just filling right in, and but Kerr has a lot to do with that, and
I think last year's loss is when the team became, I think they will become like a dynasty type Spurs team. And I mean, I've never seen anything like the Spurs getting beat the way they did and then coming back the next year. I mean, that, talk about some guts and having a mission on your mind for a whole year. And I just seeing that, I knew the Warriors were that same team this year. I'm like, nah, they're on a mission. You're baking cookies on Halloween with 3-1. I mean, you got to stuff Steph Curry at your door, Steph, you know, LeBron James Halloween party. I'm like, dude, just keep, you better not.
Did Did Steph double dribble in game two when he shook LeBron out of his shoes?
You know, when you freeze it, it does look like it. I guess it's double dribble no matter how quick you touch it. But real time, I mean, you can't even see it with your eyeball. No. That was fast. That was some magician trick. You know, there's sleight of hand. Like, so I don't know.
And I'm glad
I think he double dribbled for that pull up three yesterday. The thing went like over his head. He like brings it down. I mean, there's so much dribbling. There's so many double dribbles and travel. Mm-hmm. Like Kyle Korver took four steps to dunk the ball, and they're like, "Well, he's old. We'll give it to him."
Well, that's the Euro step and the high dribble and things
NBA.
Like that.
The new NBA. Yeah.
The new NBA.
Hey, they don't call that stuff.
NBA action is fantastic again. I'm really glad that you know, I'm just really back into the NBA, and you know, it's cool to hear what's going on over there. That nobody's taking it lightly, nobody's overconfident, but I'm sure that the city will erupt once they take care of business either Friday or in Game 5. Sean, it was a pleasure as always. Thanks for coming back on, and we'll talk to you later.
Yeah, thanks for letting me talk some dubs with you.
Oh, yeah.
All hyped up.
For sure. We'll break down the NBA draft here, see what the Pistons can do next time. All right, man, thanks.
All right, that's it.
Okay, thanks everybody for listening. Hope you enjoyed this show. Hope you enjoyed our tennis talk and our breakdown of the finals. I hope that we don't lose too many people, just that tennis is an incredible sport, especially when you get to the Grand Slams. And really cool parallels that he was making between tennis and baseball. So it's cool to hear that perspective. Everybody watch the game tonight, so you can come back to us and tell us how completely wrong we were and how we know nothing about sports. Until the next time, thanks for listening. Keep subscribing. Keep downloading. Tell your friends. And maybe I'll give you some free stuff if you guys reach back to us and let us know how we're doing, and give us some critiques and some cool 5-star reviews. Okay. Everybody, thanks a lot. We'll see you next time.